matter, and spirit. Everything material has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Or in other words, it's temporary. Whereas spirit is eternal, it has no beginning or end. In the present verse, Lord Krishna is distinguishing between the chain of material cause and effect, in which a cause produces an effect. The effect in turn becomes a cause for something else, but when that causal phase is over, that cause, which was the effect of a prior cause, also ceases to exist. And the example is given of firewood and fire. Firewood causes the fire. But when the causal effect of the firewood is over, or in other words, when the wood is burned to ashes, it no longer exists. Now, the verse mentions Sat, eternal, the one eternal, and apart from the one eternal, there are many little eternals, nityo nityanam, chaitanas chaitananam. There are many eternal, there's one among many eternal entities, there is one singular. Chaitanas chaitananam, among many conscious entities, plural number of conscious entities, there is one singular conscious entity. And that one singular eternal conscious entity is providing for the needs of and fulfilling the desires of all the plural number eternal conscious entities. And that one, of course, is Krishna. Janmadiyasiyataha. He is the origin of everything. He is the maintainer of everything. And when everything is annihilated, he alone remains. And this fact is reiterated throughout Srimad Bhagavatam and other Vedic scriptures. So, in terms of the knowledge of the jnanis, the conclusion is that one should be detached from material things, knowing that they have a beginning and an end, and in the end, everything will be lost, even the body will be lost. And therefore, such knowledge is meant to foster detachment from material things. But that is negative. What is positive? What is positive is that the Supreme Lord exists eternally. We are his parts and parcels, and we have an eternal relationship with him. He is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. And when we realize our eternal relationship with him, we also realize our eternal, spiritual, blissful natures. Now there's quite a leap from simply negating that which is temporary to accepting that which is eternal to be personal. It's quite a leap. And even amongst aspiring spiritualists, so-called spiritualists or aspiring spiritualists, it's very hard to make that leap. Most people are engrossed in matter. They are ignorant. But the few people who have a sense that there is something more than matter, who want to go beyond the vain pursuit of material objects and pleasures, they generally can understand only the impersonal aspect of the Absolute. Because actually, they're on the material platform, which is relative and full of duality. So their concept of what is spiritual really comes from a material process enacted on the material platform, which is very primitive. If you actually think about it, it's very primitive. But the logic is that we are persons and we are suffering in material existence. So if we give up being persons, then our suffering will cease. It's just a negation on the material platform. It's not a spiritual conclusion, actually. So when we as devotees try to inform people that spirit can be personal and in fact is ultimately personal, they have a difficult time because they identify personality with material personality. They say, how can you limit God by saying he's a person? Because they associate personality with material personality. If I'm a person, I can exist in the temple room of the Radha Giridhari Mandir, but I can't be in Escondido, I can't be in Los Angeles, I can't be in Santa Barbara, I can't be in Bombay at the same time. But Krishna, although a person, can be in many places at the same time, and in fact, in all places. I, as an individual soul, am conscious of what is happening in my body. The soul is situated in the region of the heart, but the consciousness spreads throughout the body. So I'm conscious of the pains and pleasures throughout the body, from head to toe. But I'm not conscious of the pains and pleasures in your body. And you're not conscious of the pains and pleasures in my body. But Krishna, he is in the heart of everybody. And he's conscious of the pains and pleasures, mental and physical, in every body. So he is a person just like we are, but we are limited and he is unlimited. Achintya Veda Ved Tattva. We are simultaneously one and different. We are one in the sense that we are both persons, individual conscious beings, but we're different in that he is unlimited and we are limited. Or, as Srila Prabhupada would say, we are one in quality but different in quantity. God is infinite and we are infinitesimal or infinite symbol. So this is a sublime philosophy because it allows for us to have a relationship with the One Eternal, with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because we have the same qualities, we can have a relationship. If there's nothing in common between two people, they cannot have any relationship. I recently heard a talk in which Srila Prabhupada was speaking about friendship. And he said, friendships are very nice between equals, people who are similar or equal in education, in culture, in opulence, and practically we see it's like that. Devotees, of course, in the broadest terms, devotees can have relationships with other devotees. They're awkward trying to have relationships with ordinary people who are averse to Krishna consciousness. And similarly, ordinary people who are averse to Krishna consciousness, they feel uncomfortable with devotees. But even amongst materialists or even amongst spiritualists, there are different gradations of age, culture, background, education, wealth, and relationships are very congenial when they are between people who have much in common. Spiritually, we have the same qualities as Krishna. Sat, we are also eternal. Chit, we are also conscious, by nature full of knowledge, and Ananda, by nature blissful, full of bliss. But because the quantity is different, the relationship is one of servant and master. And in the material world, people don't like the idea of being servants, because in the material world all relationships are miserable, but being a servant is especially repugnant. So when they hear servant, no, I'm nobody's servant, I'm my own man. But actually, it's our natural relationship to be the servant of Krishna, who is the Supreme. And in that relationship, we are happy and satisfied, and no other relationship can satisfy us. Srila Prabhupada gives the example that when a child is crying, the elders may pass the child from one adult to another, and they'll try to pacify the child. But only when the child comes to the lap of the mother, or comes into the arms of the mother, is the child satisfied. So in the same way, we may go from one relationship to another, one place to another, but we can only be satisfied in our relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world. So this is a wonderful, wonderful fact. Jiveshvara Pai, Krishna and Nityadas. It's wonderful. Our constitutional position is we are eternal servants of Krishna. What could be better? Nothing. But people have a very hard time accepting it, because they are materially conditioned and contaminated. Or, as as Srila Prabhupada would say, because they're fools and rascals. But actually, Krishna says that. Srila Prabhupada is just translating certain Sanskrit terms like mudha, duskritina, into a language that we can relate to and react to. So that is the fact. And therefore, it is very difficult to preach. Very difficult to preach because, again, most people are engrossed in matter, and the few that are reacting against the suffering of material existence try to negate everything that they associate with material existence, such as individuality, form, personality. They just try to negate it all and merge and become one and disappear. Or, in other words, as Srila Prabhupada said, commit spiritual suicide. So, devotees are very rare. And Srila Prabhupada, his own way, more colloquial way, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur in his way, analytical way, have said that even a neophyte devotee is more advanced than a so-called highly elevated and knowledgeable impersonalist. That is how rare and precious a devotee is. And we are blessed to have the association of devotees. Not everyone does. There are devotees who have lived in temples, lived in temple communities, but who, due to circumstances often related to work or family, have had to leave the community of devotees, and they end up in some place where devotees are few and far between, and they really miss the association of devotees. There are people who get books. Books are so powerful. There are people who get books and become devotees, but they might live anywhere where there's no temple, no devotees. And they read the books and they come to appreciate the importance of devotees and the association of devotees. And then they write letters where can I find devotees? And depending on where they are, they may have to travel further or lesser distances to get the association. So how fortunate we are to be in the association of devotees. And we should not take that association for granted. We should understand how rare and precious a devotee is and how valuable that association is. Because if we take something for granted, we may lose it. I mean, on one level of cause and effect, we will lose it because we are simply neglectful. And if you're not careful, you can lose something. There's a very nice devotee in London. I often stay at his house, and other devotees have frequently stayed at his house, His Holiness Jayadwaita Swami, His Holiness Sridhar Swami Maharaj, when he was with us. He parked his car a pretty nice new Mercedes Benz in his driveway, and somehow, I'm not quite sure exactly why, he didn't lock his car. He went into the house for 2 minutes to take care of something and then come back to the car. And when he came back, the car was gone in a matter of 2 minutes. So he wasn't careful. He thought, well, what's going to happen in 2 minutes? But 2 minutes is 2 minutes. A lot can happen in 2 minutes. I had my own experience. It was one of the most mortifying experiences of my early days in the movement. I was distributing books at Logan Airport in Boston, and it was late. Flying wasn't then what it is now. There weren't that many flights, even in a major airport like Logan. And, you know, it was, you know, my mood was, you know, if there's one more person left that I can approach, I'll stay out and approach that one person. So there was almost no one left in the airport. I think all the flights had pretty much departed and arrived. And I had to use the men's room. So I thought, okay. So I left my bead bag on the knob of a door outside the men's room, thinking I'll only be inside for 2 minutes. There's no one around. When I come back, my beads will be there. And when I came back, they were gone. And what a panic. Looking everywhere. There wasn't even anyone to approach, you know, to ask. So, this was probably within the first year of my having been initiated. So I wrote Srila Prabhupada, and he was very kind, and, you know, he chanted on another set of beads for me, which I still have. Don't want to jinx myself by mentioning it. So I wrote him, and, you know, he was kind enough to chant on another mala, But he wrote back, you know, you must keep your beads very carefully, because they are your direct link to Krishna. So if we value something, we will take care of it. We will be very vigilant. We won't take any chances. Interestingly enough, I was reading Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, which is one of my favorite books. And one of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's disciples asked him, when I am riding on the train and I have to heed the call of nature, what should I do with my japa mala? Because in principle, we do not take our japa mala into the stool room. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati replied that you should keep them with you. They're very valuable, and you do not want to be separated from them. So that is the principle, that if something is, if we value something, we take care of it and we don't take chances. Of course, that instruction was in a particular context of the Indian railways. I don't know now, but when we used to frequently travel on the trains in India, we had to chain our trunks to the seats. What do you speak of leaving something on the seat and going to the toilet? We could be sitting right there, but we'd still have to chain our metal trunk or suitcase to the seat. And it had to be as strong a chain and as strong a lock as possible. Because even an ordinary lock would not be that much of an impediment. We were told not to hang our arms out of the train window, because especially if we're wearing a wristwatch, some people wouldn't hesitate to lop off your arm to get your wristwatch. Leaving your japa mala in the train while you go to the water closet would probably be more risky than leaving it outside the bathroom here. But the principle is that if we value something, like Prabhupada said, that your chanting beads are your direct link to Krishna, then we don't take chances, not even for 2 minutes. So the association of devotees, we're talking about the value of the association of devotees. We don't want to take any chances on losing it. I should mention that before the class began, Dravida Prabhu told me that the Vyas Puja offerings are flooding in and that he would have to leave at 8:45 to do his service, and I shouldn't take offense, so I don't want. So I'm sure you all know that he would leave class, even a bad one like mine, unless he had other service.
Can I get on that train as well? I have a conference call at 9:00, so I'm going to stay up to the last minute, but when I get up at night about something you said, like, well, what's that all about? No. As I didn't know you were going to be in class today.
Okay.
I apologize.
Okay. Yeah, so we don't want to take any chances. I've seen parents with children. They don't take chances. They don't leave the child in the car while they run into the shop for 2 minutes or 5 minutes, because they know within less than a minute something could happen, and there's just too much at stake. They don't want to take any chance. So that should be our mood in relation to associating with devotees, or that we don't want to take any chances in jeopardizing our relationship with the devotees and our association with devotees. And that applies, that relates very much to our chanting. Because if our relationships with a devotee or devotees is disturbed, it will affect our chanting. I mean, we can be distracted by many things when we chant, but nothing can disturb our chanting. Nothing can, you could say, cause the holy name to withdraw its mercy. I mean, temporarily, that's also part of the holy name's mercy to teach us a lesson, but in the immediate sense, nothing can cause the holy name's mercy to recede like Vaishnavapura. So we should be very, very careful. And Vaishnavapura can be very subtle. I recently received a letter from the wonderful kirtan leader, Madhava. Wonderful, wonderful devotee, wonderful, wonderful kirtan leader. So he had gone somewhere for 24-hour kirtan, a major kirtan festival. And he, of course, anyone who's serious about kirtan will not, well, could be qualified, but in principle will not do it to make money. And, you know, Andhra Prabhu was most emphatic with devotees in his kirtan party that you do not accept money for your kirtan. So Madhava's like that. He doesn't want anything to disturb his relationship with the holy name or his ability to perform kirtan properly. But I'm not sure exactly what it was. He had some money in that place where he went, maybe reimbursing him for his travel. I'm not sure what it was. And he thought, instead of carrying the money with him from one country to another, that the temple would transfer the money to his account. It just seemed like the logical thing to do. But in spite of, you could say, repeated requests and reminders, he was not getting any response from the temple, I guess the treasurer, whoever it was, the person who was supposed to send the funds. And, you know, Madhava was becoming disturbed. And he was disturbed, but he was more disturbed that being disturbed about the money was create a disturbance in his kirtan. And he said that, you know, he has to chant for a good half hour to just clear his mind of any sort of distracting or disturbing thoughts. And he didn't want this to be there. But she needed the money to continue his service. So that's the way it is. That's the way it is. If one is really serious about chanting, one will not want anything to disturb one's consciousness at the time of chanting. And really, nothing can be as disturbing as a disturbance in a relationship with a devotee or a group of devotees. So you want to be very careful about that. And that care can be exercised, if you will, by remaining in the consciousness of servant. Gopi Bhartipada Kamalayor Dasa Dasa Dasa. Once in a temple there was some dissension, some conflict, and one of the devotees asked Srila Prabhupada what they could do, and Srila Prabhupada replied that if every devotee thinks that he's the servant of the servant of the servant, then there will be no difficulty. So we have to keep that consciousness, develop it, keep it. And as we discussed, in the material set world, where we've all come because we're envious of Krishna, we don't want him to be the enjoyer, we want to be the enjoyers. We don't want him to be the master, we want to be the master. So we want to be the master. We want the other devotees to serve us. And that is very offensive. Offensive to the other devotees and offensive to Krishna. To want to take his position and want to take their service instead of directing their service to him. Although the philosophy is very simple in a way, very pure and very sublime, but to actually implement it, you can't get away with doing something external. It's completely internal. You know, with karma yoga, you can do things physically with your body, but, you know, what's your consciousness? Even with, you know, austerities, yeah, you can sit in the hot sun and surround yourself with burning fire in the summer. In the winter, you can, in the freezing cold, you can immerse yourself in icy water. You can do fasts. You can do so many things with your body. But what is your consciousness? Like Srila Prabhupada said, you could be riding in a Rolls Royce and be in pure consciousness, Krishna consciousness. You can be walking barefoot on the road in a holy place and your consciousness can be completely mundane. So there's no pat formula for anything that you can do with your body to be Krishna conscious. You know, you can only be Krishna conscious by being Krishna conscious, by developing bhakti. Sometimes someone might think he needs to take support of karma or jnana, or in modern language, so many other physical, psychological techniques to help one's bhakti. But bhakti is not strengthened by anything outside of bhakti. So someone may ask, well, then where do you get the strength to progress to further stages of bhakti? the answer is it comes from the prior stage of bhakti. And this is eternal, like we're talking about cause and effect. In the same 11th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam says, Bhaktiya Sanjataya Bhakti. Bhakti comes from bhakti. And what does that mean? It means that the more advanced stage of bhakti comes from the prior stage. You could say bhava bhakti comes from sadhana bhakti. Prema bhakti comes from bhava bhakti. Bhakti comes from bhakti. And that's eternal. It's not like other causes and effects where the cause becomes an effect and then that effect in turn becomes a cause, but eventually it also terminates. All the elements in bhakti are eternal. And because of our conditioning, material conditioning, even when we come to the association of devotees, we sort of have doubts about the process of bhakti. We're not completely convinced that it's real or that it's eternal. You know, we might think, okay, well, I'll do it for a while and then, you know, I'll graduate. You know, it's like, you know, you're in grade school, then you graduate, go to high school. Then high school, you graduate, go to college. So it's like, but you don't graduate. Okay, I'm chanting now, and then when I'm self-realized, I stop chanting. I never graduate. Well, I'm serving now, but then when I become advanced, then I'm not the servant anymore, I become the master. No, it's eternal. Sat. It's eternal. Whatever we are doing now is eternal and real. And as we progress, we may become more pure in our execution of it, but our activities will remain the same. This is reality. This is not illusion. This is reality. The Radha Giridhari temple, this is reality. Radha Giridhari is reality. The service here is reality. And if we think, oh, well, you know, it's something that spiritual life is going to be different. Well, it won't be. Yeah, it will be more pure in it in that sense, but it's not going to be different. So we should take what we're doing here and now very seriously, because it's not something you do for a while and then you graduate and then you move on to something else. It's going to be chanting. It's going to be hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, discussing Srimad Bhagavatam, is going to be serving devotees. Okay, here, you got to serve the temple commander. You got to serve the temple president. Of course, here that wouldn't be a problem, but some, oh, I have to serve the temple president, what a bummer. To serve the temple commander, what a bummer. Well, that's what you're going to be doing in the spiritual world. I mean, the temple commander there might be Rupa Manjari, and the temple president might be Lalita Devi, but it's the same principle. So don't think that, you know, this is something you're just doing for a while and then you're going to graduate. This is it. This is it. This is Sat. Sanatana. This is it. So you should put everything into it. Do it as best you can, and don't take any chances. Don't be inattentive even for a minute, thinking, "Oh, nothing's going to happen," because this is it. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So, any? Ryan,
I have two questions. If it's okay.
Sure.
First question, I figure they always talk for a little bit before I ask, so I can get there a little bit late. But my first question was, if bhakti, and I fully accept, I'm just inquiring, if bhakti is the only cause of bhakti, I can understand once you're on the train, but how did you get on the train of bhakti, if bhakti is the only cause of bhakti? How does it start initially?
Very intelligent question. Befitting one of
caught you by surprise.
Stature. That very question is discussed by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And he gives the answer that the cause of bhakti is the mercy of a devotee. But in reality, the cause of bhakti is the bhakti in the heart of a devotee that inspires him to want to give mercy. That mercy is a function of his bhakti. And then when he gives his mercy, Krishna's mercy follows. And, you know, Guru Krishna Prasadi Kai Bhakti Bhakti Beach, of the combined mercy of Guru and Krishna, one gets the seed of bhakti. But in this analysis, it is specifically the mercy of the devotee, as I said, the bhakti in the heart of the devotee inspires the bhakti in the heart of the new person.
Excellent. My second question? My second question, and I don't really know how, I don't want to put you on the spot or anything, because I don't really know how to answer it either. But this principle of hierarchy, even there being in the spiritual world, and this process of serving, and, you know, you give a very nice example. You know, we're serving the temple commander, what's going to be the same mentality, same, you know, enhanced, improved, purified, and all that, but the principle remains the same. So then one could argue, well, if I'm living in the temple, then I really do have to learn that hierarchy. I work under the temple commander, I work under the temple president, and I develop that sense of self, of surrender and service, and a taste of that. If I don't live in a temple, I'm just, as the old pejorative, an independent householder, you know, other than having to follow my wife and the wife having to, you know, nagging at the husband or the husband nagging at the wife, other than that, I have no master. So am I missing out? How do I get that element? Maybe by serving my spiritual master, but how do I get that element of surrender and selflessness and like that?
That's it, the spiritual master. And as you were speaking, I immediately thought of Srila Prabhupada, who was a householder. But he was always conscious of his spiritual master and the instructions of his spiritual master. And in our case, I would say it's the general instruction to serve the Krishna consciousness movement, which means, you know, I mean, not to make it too general, but in broad terms, I think every spiritual master will instruct the disciple to take the association of devotees, which would mean generally coming to the temple or attending satsangs. Every spiritual master will tell the disciple to help spread the Krishna consciousness movement. And the vehicle that Srila Prabhupada envisioned for spreading Krishna consciousness is ISKCON. So that would mean serving ISKCON, you know, by your life, your wealth, your intelligence, your time. And when it comes to that interface with ISKCON, there will be people that you approach. There may be different people, but say you want to, you know, contribute financially. So there's someone in the temple you'll talk to. You want to arrange some satsang program. There's someone in the temple you'll talk to. Or you want to come and do some service. clean the temple, make garlands, distribute books, you know, whatever it is. So that, you know, that whether you're in the temple or outside the temple, the same basic principles operate. And I mean, when I served, when I served the temple commander, whoever my authority was, it was in my mind that Prabhupada wanted us to cooperate with the authorities. So really I'm serving Srila Prabhupada by following what the temple commander says. So I think the same applies to the whole variety of services that we can render. But that said, it is practice. It also turns out to be practice. But, you know, the hierarchy leads somewhere. It culminates with someone. And in this, and in Goloka Vrindavan, it's Krishna. Ultimately for Krishna's pleasure. And in ISKCON, I would say, yes, ultimately for Krishna, but in a more immediate sense, it's for Prabhupada's pleasure. And so, in the spiritual world, you know, what would please Krishna most? And in ISKCON, you know, what would please Prabhupada most? With the faith that by pleasing Prabhupada, Krishna will be pleased. Let's hear Prasad, by the way, Prasad. So, it would come to that. Exactly what you said when you asked the question. It starts with the order of the spiritual master to associate with devotees, to spread Krishna consciousness. Now, if one doesn't, if one hasn't accepted a spiritual master, then you could say, well, you should do what Srila Prabhupada says, you know, until one has his personal spiritual master. Even then, it would be the same thing. Associate with devotees, you know, chant, hear, serve the deities, everything that the books say, and spread Krishna consciousness. So if, I think if one is sincere and serious, that so-called, like Prabhupada himself said, Bhadra Hiran, your question is so brilliant. It's awakening.
You managed to. Whatever spark was there, you fanned.
It's awakening so many nice thoughts. There was a time when householders lived in the temples. And there was a time when maintaining some householders became a burden to the temples because they weren't really carrying their weight, if you will. And Srila Prabhupada felt in a way they were taking advantage of the temple. So then Prabhupada, I mean, it became more visible in the society after Prabhupada left, but when he was here, he did say that in principle, except for advanced householders who were rendering essential service, the householders should maintain themselves. But then the question came up about association. And Prabhupada, you know, said very nicely that they should be materially independent, financially independent, and spiritually dependent. So this phrase, independent householder, should really refer to them being independent financially, but not spiritually. Because Prabhupada gave that ideal for the householders, independent materially, but dependent spiritually. And he said, if someone's very strong, say like he was, or Bhaktivinoda Thakur was, they could maintain their Krishna consciousness without strong association. But he said, our devotees, you know, neophyte devotees, if they don't have the association of other devotees, they will become affected by the mundane association that they will have. And then he came up with that conclusion, financially independent but spiritually dependent.
Very good, very much.
Hare Krishna. Well, I think no more needs to be said. Radha Narayan Prabhu has elicited the essence. Hare Krishna. Shiva Prabhupada ki
jai.
Jai Gaur Premanandi.
Jai.